The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
The following program is a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcast Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com to learn more about this and our other weekly storytelling programs and become a patron today to show your support and get instant access to our extensive archive of downloadable tales of terror. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show. Disclaimer. Horror Hill is a horror anthology podcast bringing you scary stories from all corners of the internet and beyond. As such, certain stories include content that some listeners might find offensive. Listener discretion is advised. Greetings, listeners, and welcome to a new episode of Horror Hill. So fresh that it's practically dripping. I'm Eric Peabody, and tonight we have two stories from author Jason Fisher. Good old Jason has a new collection out with Velux Books titled The Haunting of Town Point Mall, and we've been lucky enough to grab a couple of delicious morsels from it to share with you fine folks. To begin, we'll be reading The Bookkeeper, where the owner of a small independent bookstore has a run-in with a rather strange and jolly juggler. And just like one of his strangely glowing balls, he just keeps showing up again and again. Then, we'll wrap ourselves up in Tangled Web, where a shy young man in a dead-end job might have just met the woman of his dreams. Or nightmares. And also, speaking of Velux Books, they have a new audio collection out from Micah Edwards, an author frequently featured on this show. And wouldn't you know it, that new collection is narrated by none other than yours truly. Head over to Audible and grab a copy of A Talent for Destruction if your weekly dose of Horror Hill still leaves you craving more. You're listening to the free edition of this program. If you'd like to help support Horror Hill and also remove these pesky ads, head to chillingtalesfordarknights.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. You'll get instant access to hundreds of ad-free stories, so what are you waiting for? Also, if you're watching on YouTube, do us a favor and drop a like and subscribe. Become part of our dark circle, listeners. And now, from author Jason Fisher, I give you The Bookkeeper. When Martin opened his used bookstore, after leaving the world of trading and its narrow-minded ideology behind, he imagined he would be spending his days in intellectual conversations. Instead of arguing over the merits of finer literary works, however, he was currently negotiating the value of a 20-year-old gardening book with Mrs. Johnson. She was a regular of Best Books and Antiquities. Her weekly pilgrimage on the senior bus tour always brought a sale, but only after he had made a healthy concession. Half listening as she pleaded her case, Martin found himself watching an odd man at the back of the hobby section. There was something about the man that Martin found disconcerting. As Mrs. Johnson's insistent tone increased, he tried to compose himself before speaking. "I assure you, I appreciate your continued business, but you must understand there's very little markup on all of my merchandise. As I explained, I have a very limited budget." Thinking of his grandmother, he stifled his chosen response and instead replied, "I will discount the book $1. That's the absolute best I can do." The elderly woman, with a sly smile, pulled out her purse and started counting out change. Martin wrote up the receipt and bagged Gardening for Beginners. Swiping the pile of change from the polished counter, Martin politely said, "I'll see you next week." His insistent customer left with a brief nod, walking into the mall's main hallway. His attention turned to his only other patron. The man stood with his face inches away from the bookstand, slowly moving his head from left to right. Martin hadn't ever seen anyone so disproportionately configured in his life. All the man's significant girth was contained in his midsection, but his arms and legs were exceptionally gaunt. It gave him the appearance of a ballerina wearing a tutu. Wondering if his shape resulted from a medical condition or just unfortunate genetics, Martin exited the triangular counter behind which he spent most of his waking hours and approached him. As he snaked through the mystery aisle filled with a healthy mixture of paperbacks and hardcovers that smelled of years gone by, his heart rate slowly increased. A reluctance to engage in confrontation was one of the main reasons he had taken the small fortune he had made in his previous life and opened the bookstore. Feeling the deeply buried emotions surface, Martin came to the hobby section, which was the largest mixture of books and peculiar antiques. "Can I help you, sir?"
"Perhaps you might. I was looking for a new hobby and found myself overwhelmed by the options before me."
He let out a high-pitched laugh, staring with bulbous eyes at Martin.
"Saying that out loud, it sounds ridiculous, doesn't it? How could you possibly know what hobby would capture my interest?"
His smile revealed teeth so small they almost didn't seem real.
"Are you the owner of this wonderful shop?"
The man's head reminded Martin of a giant softball. His skin was stretched so tightly it looked more like smooth rawhide than flesh. It didn't reveal a single blemish or pore. Accentuating an attempt to appear more youthful, the pear-shaped customer was wearing a small baseball cap, exposing tufts of curly hair around the edges, the blonde locks looking clearly synthetic. Hiding his unease, Martin responded, "Yes, I am." Not wanting to touch the man, Martin had the sense that if he did, it would lead to an odd infection. He neither offered him his hand nor gave his name.
"I love stores like this. The way you have everything displayed is so pleasant."
Without taking his eyes off Martin, he grabbed a book off the shelf. Extending it inches from the shopkeeper's nose, he asked,
"If I purchased this, would you happen to have a dummy amongst your antiques to go with it?"
The cover had an obnoxiously realistic ventriloquist dummy smiling beneath the title, "Ventriloquism by Victor." This close, he could smell the mustiness of the book, as well as his customer's fingers. The smell reminded him of the outhouse that used to be behind his uncle's fishing shack. Taking a step back, Martin quietly said, "No, I definitely do not."
"That's a shame. I think I would quite enjoy having a tiny wooden friend."
The peculiar man parted his lips further, revealing more uneven, stained teeth. Wanting the man out of his bookstore, but not quite up to asking him to leave, Martin retreated. "Well, let me know if you have any other questions." Not waiting for a response, he walked back to his counter. Over the next 10 minutes, not a single customer entered the store. Such droughts were not uncommon at this time of day. Not only was the store empty,
but as he looked down the mall concourse, he didn't see any activity in the other stores. Martin did his best to make himself look busy, rearranging the books behind his counter. But every time he would look back to the hobby section, his rotund customer would be squarely staring at Martin, with his hand in his pocket. The silk material of his slacks was remarkably thin, making it easy to see that he was flexing his fingers in a rhythmic, stroking motion. Quickly, the shopkeeper diverted his attention back to his made-up task. With his back turned, he couldn't stop himself from imagining the man sneaking up behind and assaulting him. Although ridiculous, he couldn't shake the anxiety. With thoughts of the man's breath on the back of his neck, Martin contemplated calling mall security, as he was well past the concern of offending a customer. As he glanced at the phone, wondering how to say he wanted someone removed because he was giving Martin the creeps, the man, as if he could read Martin's thoughts, approached the counter. He held a thin book in his hand. Martin looked at the cover. It was a book on juggling. The soft cover binding had netting attached at the bottom cover, with balls nestled inside. "Will that be cash or charge?" With an almost lyrical tone, the odd man smiled and said, "Cash." Martin watched the man removing his wallet. It was a child's wallet, with a large cowboy leaning against a post stenciled into the fake leather cover. Ignoring the incongruence, he replied, "That will be $8 even, please." The man removed the money. In a flash, Martin caught a glimpse of black and white photos inside the fold of the wallet. The images of the mannequin-like dolls made him sick to his stomach. As he took the bills, the customer purposefully slid his finger across the back of Martin's hand, making him flinch. Martin shoved the money into the register and wrote out the receipt. Refusing to make contact with the man again, he slid the bag across the counter. The pear-shaped customer grabbed it. "Thank you. You have a lovely store. I'll be sure to tell my friends." Martin watched the man leave the store and saunter along the mall's long hallway, his waist swaying in an exaggerated motion with each small step. Wanting to be sure he had exited the mall, the bookkeeper walked into the mall concourse. Standing in front of the storefront of Popcorn and Pop, he felt relief as the odd man disappeared through the glass doors of the west entrance. Feeling exhausted, Martin re-entered his store, wishing it was time to go home to play with the kids and walk the dog. That evening, after the chaos of getting the twins to bed, Martin kissed his wife, Margaret, and promised to help with the dishes as soon as he got back from his walk. They both knew his walk was an excuse for him to smoke a cigar, a replacement habit after he quit cigarettes, but neither spoiled the vice by discussing it. These shared understandings were the cornerstone of their marriage, each learning to take as much as they gave. It was unbelievably hot, even for the middle of summer in the Illinois suburb. As he made his way down the driveway, the humidity felt like walking through a wave of steam. Twilight was just settling over the neighborhood as he cut across his neighbor's prized lawn to the walking path. Smelling fertilizer and the dampness from the short rainstorm that had just swept through, Martin walked under the tree canopy and onto the asphalt trail. Lighting his cigar, he heard the sounds of bullfrogs disrupting the steady cadence of crickets' rhythmic chirping. Martin imagined thousands of them just beyond the darkness. As he puffed vigorously, the smoke mixed with the already heavy air, creating a cloud that hung lazily around him. Lightheaded from the first drag, Martin saw a moving light off in the distance. It was hard to determine the source, as it was traveling in an erratic oblong circle several feet off the ground. Small beams arched, rose, and fell at a hypnotic pace. Slowly, Martin realized that the glowing lights were balls being juggled. Thinking of the man from the store brought a wave of panic. Martin froze as he watched the balls rise higher. With only moonlight illuminating the path, the juggler appeared as a large, indistinguishable shape. After almost a full minute of watching the eerie light show, he heard a high-pitched giggle. The instinct to run shot adrenaline through him. He drew in a deep breath, trying to corral his wild thoughts. It felt like his mind was moving in 100 directions. Finally, The need to know if this was the man from earlier won out. With trembling fingers, he reached for his lighter, quickly striking it. The flame did nothing to illuminate the darkened path beyond a few feet in front of him. Realizing the spinning balls were getting closer, Martin, thinking of his family, walked briskly toward the shape. As he got nearer, the juggler's shadow appeared to be a long, skinny image. Suddenly, the juggling stopped, and the balls disappeared until only one was visible. The black shape thrust it to the ground and then stomped on it, mashing it into the path. Focusing on the afterglow of the juggler's ball, Martin did not see the shape saunter off into the woods. Walking briskly, Martin stared at the glowing goo that was smeared on the ground. Standing over it, he rubbed it with the tip of his shoe. Squinting, he scanned the thick woods, trying to find the man. All he saw were the shadowy outlines of the forest. Slowly, he knelt and picked up the remnants of the ball. On the flattened end, he saw a crude drawing of a dog's face, and, in marker beneath the picture, the word dog. The lettering was childlike. Not knowing what to make of it, he suddenly felt it was important to keep the ruined toy. Staring into the darkness, he thought of the odd man he encountered earlier. Quickly, dread filled him, feeling like liquid drowning his heart. He snubbed out his cigar and headed back down the path to his house with the overwhelming feeling that he needed to protect his family. As he jogged back, the former accountant tried to calculate the odds that the night juggler he had just encountered was the same person as the creep who had been in his store earlier. Thinking in his normal, pragmatic way helped somewhat to calm his nerves, the focus being pulled from the physical sensations. Martin walked up the drive and entered through the back gate. Before he went in, he called Harry, feeling it would be best to let him sleep inside tonight. After several unanswered calls, he gave up, hoping the dog had just snuck off for his rendezvous with the neighbor's dachshund.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
That night, after settling the chores, he double-checked every window and door. He knew he had to choose his words carefully. Telling Margaret what he witnessed felt like an overreaction, but as the night wore on and their dog still did not return, his anxiety was growing. Watching her slather lotion on her bare legs, he said, "Anything interesting happened today?" "Well, if getting gum out of Toby's hair is considered interesting, then yes." Did he fall asleep with it in his mouth again? "Oh no. Your darling daughter put it there when he knocked down her kitchen fort." She looked up and grinned. "Remember when we thought having twins would be the best? Give the children constant entertainment." She stuck her tongue out as she mimed choking herself. "Sometimes I just like to ship them off to grandma's for the day. Or month." She let out a grunt of a laugh, tossing her hair scrunchie at him. "You're terrible." The way she smiled made her look like she did back when they were in high school. It was her full Margaret smile. Thinking of the days when mortgages, healthcare, and obtrusive customers didn't take up all his time, a wave of sadness came over him. "Just joking." "Sure." "Has anyone been around lately?" "Like who?" "Salespeople." He quickly filled in the thought, seeing the concern in her eyes. Her paranoia could be turned on much easier than it could be shut off. "When I pulled into the neighborhood, I saw some folks going door to door." "No, nothing like that." Watching her switch from lotion to inspecting her cuticles, he wanted to describe the man. He knew how she would react. Searching for a good way to do it, he finally saw no reason to get her riled up over something that might have just been a coincidence. From the bed, he glanced out the window. It was so dark he couldn't even see the doghouse. He fought the urge to go back outside, not wanting to give the anxiety room to grow. Helping to decide, Margaret turned off the light and crawled into bed. As she had done every night since they were married 8 years ago, she leaned over and pecked him on the forehead, saying, "I love you, darling." With the lights off as he lay in bed, he was certain he saw a ventriloquist's dummy staring at him through the crack of the closet door. He finally fell asleep. The next morning, his children were watching their cartoons in the television nook. Martin, no longer being able to hold in the anxiety while sipping coffee, anxiously asked his wife, "Did you let Harry out?" Margaret squinted at him as she worked over a bowl of meat and spices. "What are you talking about? Harry, did you let him out back?" "Are you feeling all right?" "Yeah, why?" "Because you're saying silly things." She looked up, flipping her hair back with a bemused half-smile. "Who's Harry?" "Look, I'm in no mood for games." In unison, his golden-haired children looked at their father, annoyed by the interruption from the blue creatures that were hopping around mushroom houses. Looking from them and back to his wife, her expression had turned from amused interest into a focused stare. Glaring at her wrinkled forehead, Martin forced a smile as he said gently, "Sorry, guys." He walked up to Margaret. "I didn't sleep well last night. I'm sorry I yelled, but please, come off it. Did you put the dog out this morning?" Extracting her filthy hands from the mix, she stared directly at him and said, "Okay, you're really worrying me now. Why are you talking about a dog?" "Why wouldn't I?" "Because we don't have a dog." He cocked his head to the side, examining her. "Oh, sorry, I must have forgotten about that. Well, if we don't have a dog, why have we been buying so much food for him then?" He yanked open the pantry door. Pulling the boxes from the shelf, he frantically rifled through the various cans and other food, coming up empty. Quickly, he looked under the overhang of the counter. The feeding bowl was also missing. Trying to process why anyone would create such an elaborate practical joke, he looked back at her. Margaret stared at her husband, and Martin, for the first time in his life, thought she appeared authentically afraid of him. "Honey, I think you should lie down. You don't look well." Pointing his finger in the air for emphasis, he nearly shouted, "The doghouse!" He walked around the remnants of the blanket fort and went through the sliding glass door. Making his way to the side of the house, he quickly discovered that the doghouse was gone. He heard the swoosh of the back door, and Margaret, wearing only her Stones t-shirt with big red lips, walked up to him. The wind was whipping her hair over her face. "You're really scaring me." "You think you're scared? Where the hell is our dog and his house?" He looked down at the grass in the exact area where he remembered the concrete pad having been located. With a shocked expression, he quickly patted down the grass with his sock, thinking of the weekend he had spent building it. The memory was so vivid, his hand went to his back, remembering the soreness over the physical labor. "We don't have a dog, Martin. We've never even talked about getting one." Margaret spoke slowly, as if she was talking to their children. "So you're telling me that 2 months ago, I didn't bring home the stray that I found in the service corridor of the mall? We haven't been playing with him every night. Elizabeth didn't name him Harry after that dumb movie with the hairy monster we took them to." Exasperated, she responded, "No." "Well, we'll see what the kids have to say about that then." As he spun to head back in, she grabbed the back of his pajama shirt. Startled, he turned. "I don't know what's going on with you, but I'll not allow you to bring the kids into this." Martin saw the fear in her face. He finally felt that whatever was happening, Margaret had nothing to do with it. Suddenly, his clothes felt heavy, and it was becoming difficult to breathe. He leaned forward to hug her, and she took a step back. "I'm sorry. I must not be fully awake, but I really believed for a minute we had a dog." Feeling an overwhelming urge to take back the entire conversation, he quickly added, it's okay, I'm better now. He wanted to believe that lie more than he had ever wanted to believe anything in his life. The image of the dog running and digging up the yard floated in his mind as if his memories were intentionally taunting him. Margaret stepped closer and hugged Martin. Dripping her tears into his shoulder, she said, "I thought moments like this were over when you quit that horrible job. Do you promise you're better?" Margaret pulled her head back, staring at him with an almost childlike look of confusion. "Are you really just tired? You're truly okay." He caressed her back, feeling the silkiness of her long hair. "Yes, I promise." He immediately felt guilty for lying to her. As he squeezed her, he knew he had to get away from them. He felt he was at the center of whatever was happening, and the only way to keep them safe was to leave. Later that day, with the store full of customers, Martin saw the juggler again in the main hallway. In the sunken conversation area, the odd man sat alone on the bench. As soon as they made eye contact, the portly man reached slowly into his jacket pocket, pulled out the toys, and began juggling. The balls moved so slowly it was as if there was no gravity weighing them down. There were several other mall patrons walking by, but none of them seemed to notice the macabre performance. Martin watched, ashamed of his hesitation to confront the man, as the corridor slowly cleared. Alone now, the man caught all the balls in one hand and reached for what appeared to be a white fabric bag. Expecting him to put the toys away, Martin was astonished to watch him pull the bag over his face. Painted in crude colors were lips and a nose, and surrounding the cutouts for eyes were large irregular circles. Through the burlap, he winked. As he resumed juggling, the mask bobbed up and down, tracing the flight of the balls. Martin's throat was so dry it hurt to swallow. Frozen, he watched the balls fly in a perfectly repetitive circle. Moments later, with two young women approaching, the juggler caught the balls in one hand and pulled off the mask. The swift motion dislodged the curly wig, exposing erratic patches of hair amongst the baldness. As soon as the other shoppers were past him, he resumed his show, smiling in Martin's direction. Martin quickly realized this lunatic was putting on a special performance just for him. Finding strength, he ran out into the hallway to confront the juggler. In an instant, the odd man was up, moving faster than should be possible for someone of his size, leaving the balls scattered about the floor. Martin was gaining ground as he ran toward the juggler when suddenly, a teenager on roller skates flew out of Popcorn and Pop, colliding with him. Athletically, he gripped the girl around the waist and twisted her so he didn't fall directly on her, causing him to slam against the hard floor. He quickly disentangled himself and resumed his pursuit, running down the main corridor. But it was too late. The man was no longer in sight. Dashing to the glass vestibule at the end of the long hallway, Martin peered out into the parking lot. There was no sign of him, just rows and rows of cars. He walked back to the roller girl and asked, "Are you all right?" "Fine," she looked down at her scraped elbow. "Why are you running around like that? Why are you roller skating in the mall?" She ignored the question with a shrug and an eye roll. "Hey, mister, are those yours?" She was pointing at the balls lying on the red carpeting of the sunken seating area. He walked parallel with the benches built into the waist-high brick walls and picked them up. Examining them, he found each one had a drawing in marker and captioned beneath, "Father, Mother, Son, Daughter, and Dog." The ball with "Dog" on it was slightly larger than the others, as if it wasn't part of the original set, and had a large black X through it. His blood seemed to flow faster when he noticed the "Daughter" ball was slightly dented, looking like a crescent moon. He pressed the ball carefully between his hands to reform its shape. Slowly, he walked back to his store, carefully handling the juggler's toys. Going down the classic section of the bookstore's long aisle, he entered his office. Not knowing what else to do, he locked them in his safe. When he got back to the front desk, he immediately called Margaret. The call was answered with loud screaming in the background. Fighting panic, he said, "Honey, what's up?"
"Speak up, I can't hear you."
"What's wrong with Elizabeth?"
"Oh, she climbed onto the back of the couch and then went straight down on her noggin. It was pretty scary for a second. I guess it was my panic, but when I first scooped her up, I could have sworn her head was caved in."
Martin could still feel the ball popping back in place in his palm, turning his stomach.
"Anyway, she's fine now. Just a slight bump. Isn't that right, Pumpkin?"
The sound of crying was slowly becoming convulsive sniffling, a telltale sign he'd learned that the injury wasn't serious. Martin wanted to yell, "Don't leave the house!" but quickly wondered what good that would do. Panic made its way through him as he thought of his daughter and how close she came to whatever fate Harry had experienced.
"I'll let you take care of her then. I'm glad she's okay."
"Honey, why'd you call in the first place?"
"Just wanted to check in. I really have to go now. Goodbye."
He slammed the phone down, his legs feeling like they could no longer support him. The rest of the afternoon was filled with tension as Martin tried to figure out a way to keep his family safe. He welcomed the intermittent thoughts that he was losing his grip on reality. It was the only explanation that his overtaxed mind could accept. All that he truly knew was that he was terrified and had an overwhelming feeling that if he left the store, something awful would happen. Fatigue was making it hard to think. Checking his watch, he saw it was closing time. He walked to the front of the store and placed his key into the electronic lock that activated the metal rolling gate. As it slowly closed, he stared out into the vast, empty hallway of the mall, listening to the piped-in organ music. With a jolt, the gate contacted the tile floor. He slipped the locks into place, then went to the control panel behind the register and turned off the lights. In the distance, he heard a high-pitched voice singing, "Which is next? Which is next?" Looking down the rows of books, he saw the glowing balls rise and fall in their imperfect arc. The black shape behind them slowly bobbed down the middle of the display shelves, the large waistline swinging back and forth, nearly touching the books as he got closer to the front of the store. Martin walked backward with his heart pounding in his ears until he found himself pinned against the metal gate. He could feel the rigid, serrated slats pressed up against his back as he frantically tried to create more room between him and the man coming his way. "Which is next? Which is next?" With each slow, meandering step, the light of the mall revealed more of the crudely painted cloth face. The crooked features distorted any humanity other than piercing eyes. Martin watched the fixed fabric smile. The painted blood-red lips made it impossible to tell where they ended and the flesh began. Martin could imagine those lips caressing things they shouldn't. The thought nearly made him vomit. He pushed with all his might against the unforgiving gate.
"Help!"
The word came out in a choked whisper, faintly echoing into the empty mall corridor. The juggler slowly shook his head, saying,
"No, no,"
stomping his foot mockingly against the hard floor.
"Please, leave me alone."
With a clown-like skip, the juggler caught all the balls in one hand, singing loudly.
"Which is next? Which is next?"
The mask danced along the shadows of the room, making it appear animated. As if he was performing in a circus, he hummed a strange tune, twirling his free hand, and threw the balls higher into the air. Each glowing ball now nearly came into contact with the paneled ceiling. He slowed the balls as he tossed them, making the images on them perfectly visible. Martin watched the crudely drawn faces of his children flash before his eyes. He wanted to run and tackle the man, but he couldn't find the strength. Instead, he stood frozen, wishing he could be anywhere but here. Quickly, the juggler darted his feet out in a little dance.
He giggled in a melodically humorless way. The noise echoed against the bookcases.
Which is next? Which is next? Time to take the test.
He skillfully plucked a single ball from the air and violently threw it against the vinyl floor. Letting the rest of them fall to the ground, the masked man cackled as he watched the single ball bounce in front of him. Raising his shoe slowly, he settled the ball onto the floor and then, with a theatrical twist, crushed the obscene toy. As blackness came over everything, Martin's last thought was what would become of his children. The rickety bus made its way in front of Town Point Mall. Mrs. Johnson was the first to exit the aging vehicle. With a smile on her face, she entered the glass vestibule, welcoming the cool blast of air conditioning after the sweltering ride across town. As she made her way down the corridor, she passed several groups of teenagers milling about. She was wondering if her daughter let her grandchildren go out looking like streetwalkers. Mrs. Johnson considered herself progressive, but how did any of these girls expect to find a husband with their multicolored hair and clothes that were too tight? Thinking of her grandchildren reminded her that she was expecting to hear from her daughter, if she wasn't too cheap to make the long-distance call. It was, after all, her turn. Mrs. Johnson couldn't be expected to pay for all her calls, not with the tight budget she was on. If she did, she wouldn't be able to take her weekly shopping trips, and they were all she had to look forward to. Turning the corner, she came to a day spa. She stood momentarily confused. She could have sworn that there used to be a bookstore in this very spot. Without giving it much thought, she walked into the waiting area and saw a portly gentleman sitting on a very modern-looking couch. Noticing her, he removed his ball cap and nodded, smiling. Something about his gaze made her shuffle away quickly.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
You've been listening to The Bookkeeper by Jason Fisher. Next, also from Mr. Fisher, I present Tangled Web. A knock on the door made Robert's heart drop. Quickly, he dumped the paper towels he had been using to clear the web into the trash. Through the thick steel door that separated him from the department store, he could hear the familiar organ music and the voice of the only person who, to the best of his knowledge, knew he still worked there. "You going to let me in?" Robert pressed his ear tightly against the cold metal. "Is anyone else around?" "Open the door, weirdo." With a sigh, he opened the lock. Anne entered, wearing her Gatlet's badge. She'd pinned her hair on top of her head using an oversized decorative Christmas pin that had a glowing light. "Greetings and salutations. How are things in the Office of Doom?" Robert quickly slammed the door shut. The second it closed, he felt slightly more at ease. "Why are you here?"
"Good to see you as well. Yes, I'm doing great. So kind of you to ask."
She stopped in the middle of the room, looking at the waste receptacle next to his desk. Her voice dropped an octave.
"Oh, is the spider back?"
The tension attacked his shoulders at the mention of the creature that had been torturing him for the last few weeks.
"Yeah."
"Did it have the same thick web?" She stepped forward and stuck her fingertip into the discarded towels. She extracted a portion with her pinky. It stuck on contact, leaving a long trail as she stood up straight.
"Yuck, this can't be real. It's like a friggin' cord."
She shivered, shaking the web off her finger and letting it fall to the floor. Did you call maintenance? Why are you here? Why do you get so weird every time I venture down here? Her eyes narrowed. Having no one else to confide in, Robert wanted to tell her, but found he couldn't. The words were stuck, held back by either instinct or fear. Saving him the trouble of fumbling through an excuse, she went to his desk, grabbing his pencil drawings. These are really good. Like, really good. She turned, smiling, exposing lipstick that was half chewed off. He couldn't remember having seen her with her lipstick not half gone, making him wonder how she sold cosmetics. Being half made up somehow seemed to suit her boundless energy, but he couldn't see anyone trusting her for advice, looking disheveled as she did. She was holding a pencil sketch of a kitchen from the late 60s at eye level, examining it with her head tilted sideways. He'd copied it from an old brochure he found in the files of the warranty department that he spent most of his time in.
Thanks.
How long have you been drawing?
Not sure. I guess I started about 8 weeks ago.
He knew it was very close to that. The spider web that had been taking most of his attention had appeared the next day, making it easier to remember. She spun her head in his direction with wide eyes.
And you're this good already?
Robert shrugged his shoulders. Compliments always made him want to crawl deeper into himself than he already was.
It's quiet down here, so I've had plenty of time to practice.
I could practice until I die and not do anything half as good. Into his chest, he mumbled,
"Thanks."
Looking down at the floor, he saw the discarded web. He imagined hairy legs crawling up his pants. He shuddered, trying to hide it from the girl he wished he could find the courage to ask out.
"Ha! Look at you, all turning red!"
After a quick, antagonizing smile, she moved to his next drawing. "Are you working through lunch again?" He reached into the filing cabinet on his right and grabbed his bag lunch, presenting it with a quick flip of the hand.
"Yeah, got a tight budget."
He placed it back just above the pneumatic tubes that were installed when the store first opened in the 70s. They were there to transfer mail to the various departments. He squinted, searching the area around the paneled ceiling where the tubes protruded for gaps large enough for a spider to squeeze through.
"Okay."
He thought he saw disappointment, but was never good at these things. Finding courage, his lips parted to ask if she wanted to come down and join him, but the ringing of the phone interrupted him. Her head jerked back from the obnoxiously loud noise. The mechanical bell went off again, echoing in the small office. The phone was as old as everything else in the room.
"That sounds like a freaking air raid bell. Are you going to answer it?"
"It's some kind of glitch. No one will be there. I've been getting calls like that for a few weeks."
"How do you know it isn't a customer needing service?"
"I haven't had a service call in over a year," he thought.
With a sigh, he walked past her, smelling her perfume as he did. Every time he inhaled that flowery aroma, he felt weak in a way that frightened and exhilarated him. He picked up the receiver and his chest tightened.
"Gatlet's warranty."
There was a slight hum and the persistent scratching noise that had been there on the last few calls. The noise reminded him of a fingernail rhythmically scratching the inside of a plastic cup. He hung up, placing the receiver back in the cradle, canceling out the rhythmic echo.
"Nobody there."
"Maybe it needs tuning. Is that a word?"
She looked at the trash once again, her forehead wrinkling as she stared at the discarded pieces of the web. "Why this place doesn't catch up to the 90s is beyond me. Do you want me to tell maintenance? The office is near the cosmetics counter."
"No!"
He cringed for shouting.
No thanks. I'll take care of it."
"Again, why are you so worried about people coming in here?"
"I don't have time to get into it right now."
He glanced up at the clock, hoping she would have to leave, as the store was opening in less than a minute.
"Just promise me you won't say anything."
"Okay, suit yourself." Following his eyes, she glanced at her watch. "Anyhow, I gotta get upstairs before they send out a search party for me. Door's opening in a few." Flashing a bright smile, she added,
"Duh, I nearly forgot the reason I came down here. I wanted to make sure you didn't forget about us going out to eat tonight. Trivia night at Cozy Corner? Tonight's the qualifying round."
"Oh, of course. I'll be there."
The chance at a $100 gift certificate to the mall was the only way he could explain someone like her paying any attention to someone like him. He had met her there by chance last month, impressing her with his knowledge of obscure facts, and they teamed up, and since then they'd been meeting every Tuesday.
"Okay, partner, see you then."
She opened the door, fumbling with the lock. Peering around her, Robert struggled to see down the long brick hallway.
"Please don't forget your promise."
"Huh?
To not talk to maintenance."
"Yeah, whatever."
The second she left, Robert locked the door. Alone again, the hum of the fluorescent lights was the only noise in the office that was feeling more and more like a tomb. Knowing he had over 8 hours to kill, he returned to the filing cabinets to find something to draw. Skipping several folders of past kitchen renovations, he stopped at one labeled Hedron. In it was a picture of a kitchen dated October 1978. He remembered that was around the time the mall opened. When he saw the woman in the photo, he knew it would be his next drawing. Her gaze seemed to speak to him. Sitting down and putting pencil to paper, Robert felt like he was in the room in the picture, so much so that even the lighting seemed different. The hum was gone, replaced with the soft laughter of the woman in high heels that matched her auburn hair. In a trance, he studied her, trying to figure out how to sketch her. The shrill ring of the phone pulled him from his concentration. He lifted the receiver and replaced it, quickly severing the connection and glancing at the clock. An hour had gone by since Anne left. He stared at the hands of the clock, waiting for them to speed up as if in a cartoon. There was no way that much time could have gone by. He let out a grunt of a laugh.
"As if the spider hunt isn't enough, now I gotta figure out how to fix a clock."
Resuming with his pencil, he got lost in his sketch. With each stroke, the model became more real to him. He swore he could feel her presence in the room, her warmth and energy fueling him to continue. Leaning closer to the sketch, he smelled an intoxicating perfume. As he filled in the details of the model, he was filled with a sensation that he was creating what had been missing in his life, a silent, unjudging companion. As he filled in the outline of her dress, he imagined what underthings she wore. The thought made him tingle with excitement. Lightly shading in the curves, he was picturing sexy garters and stockings like he used to see in the catalogs he would sneak into his room when he was a kid. With each line he drew, without effort or planning, his mind and hand, as if they were guided by an unseen force, created a nearly flawless drawing. Moving downward on his sketch, he completed the hem of the dress, and then, for the first time, it was as if his muse had disappeared. He struggled to get the proper arch on the high heels, so much so that the tip of the pencil dug deep into the paper, leaving a tiny hole. Ignoring the frustration, he moved on, taking a moment to close his eyes, visualizing every line and curve of her face. The mental scan took in every contour of her pretty nose and even her slight imperfections. Having read somewhere that symmetry was the most attractive feature of the human face, he decided he would correct hers. In a flourish, he perfected her beauty, brushing and shading with the tip of his finger. With every pencil stroke, he felt more confident that he belonged on Earth to be in this room to create this woman. The hours and hours of free time that the job created were there for this reason. Carefully, he completed her hair, smudging the drawing to add depth. Robert's tracing movement no longer felt like graphite on paper, but human hair, momentarily lifting the loneliness that he always carried around. For the first time in months, he allowed himself to think that all the time he had wasted alone wasn't for nothing. His fingers ached. Massaging them, he glanced at the clock. His heart skipped a beat. If he was right, the store closed 10 minutes ago. When he stood, his leg muscles were stiff. He stretched as he walked across the room and placed his ear against the door. The organ music was off. Knowing the only way that could be possible was if the clock was accurate, he whispered, "What the fuck?" Slowly, he turned the knob. Peering down the hallway, half the lights were off. Management always did that to encourage the retail workers to get out as quickly as possible to avoid paying overtime. He put the back of his hand to his forehead, wondering if perhaps he was coming down with something and had unwittingly fallen asleep. His temperature felt normal. Assuming he had most likely dozed off, healthy or not, it wasn't the first time in that lonely space. He grabbed his jacket. Glancing at the photo, he didn't want to leave it there. Something deep down told him to bring it with him. With a quick shake of his head, he turned off the light. Robert clicked the lock to the office, hoping there wouldn't be any new creatures in the room tomorrow. He was determined to leave the growing anxiety inside the room. His office, with its crooked warranty sign, seemed more and more like a crypt over the last few weeks, but the thought of not coming back brought equal parts of fear and relief. As he walked down the long, brick-lined hallway, tension grew, returning to his shoulders. The closer he got to the first-floor concourse, so did the desire not to return, the feeling inspired by the plastic holiday decorations that had hung on its walls since the late 70s. Reminders of so many past Christmases alone weighed him down. The management of the mall's last anchor store seemed intent on keeping the space a time capsule. He passed the animated North Pole elves surrounding the replica of Santa's workshop. He hated the way the glass eyes of the motion figures seemed to follow him on his way to the escalator. Their jerky movements spoiled the illusion that they were from a magical realm and not just plastic animatronics. Reaching the second floor, he hurried past the door of the manager's office, nearly sprinting. He paused momentarily at the oversized display of the two-tiered model train tracks. The toy trains were running so fast he could smell the heated motor, making him wonder if they ever turned them off. As Robert made his way to the main exit, he weaved his way behind the shoppers, wondering how the ridiculous displays still drew such decent crowds. Exiting the double glass vestibule, the chill of the ferocious late December air attacked his bare skin. He pulled his collar up tight and strode through the parking lot. It was Tuesday, and tonight was half-price night at Cozy Corner, the small restaurant nestled in the corner of the mall's parking lot. He entered to the nearly deafening noise of a crowd. The lure of chicken wings had proved irresistible to the residents of the Illinois suburb. Peeking through a mob of heavy winter jackets, Anne's waving hand was barely visible. Glad to see that his co-worker got a premium spot at the bar, he joined her, hopping onto the leather bar stool. "Good to see you, stranger." Robert sat, swiveling on the bar stool. Seeing the cloudiness in her gaze, he suspected she was at least two beers in. "Hey!" They were practically screaming over the crowd noise. Robert took off his heavily padded jacket, sweltering in the packed room. Every time he was here, he wondered if the heating system was faulty or if the management kept it warm to encourage drink sales. The waitress, wearing an ill-fitting uniform, brought over two mugs of beer and heavily scratched plastic replica steins. She looked out of place behind the bar, like she would be more comfortable teaching grade school children than dispensing beer. With a demure smile, she left them to their drinks. "Hope you don't mind, I took the liberty." With a quick wave, Anne gestured to the beer. His fear was slowly letting go as he stared at her. He felt more and more as if she could solve all his anxiety with just her smile. "Thank you." He grabbed the beer and took a sip. It tasted bitter, as if they hadn't cleaned the tap in some time. Robert looked at the blurred image from the large mirror running the length of the bar. Most thought it was there to make the room look bigger, but he knew it allowed everyone to leer at others anonymously. The room was filled with younger people playing verbal chess, trying to become better acquainted. Looking at a group of young women in short skirts behind them, he cringed, feeling that always invited trouble in a bar. Anne gently tapped his elbow. "See anything you like?" Feeling embarrassed, his face heated, feeling like sunburn. "No, really, no." She smiled her wide smile, revealing her half-painted lips. He wanted to ask her if she painted them that way purposefully, but couldn't find the courage. "Okay, then. So, are you ready for the big event?" She stared at him. After a few seconds, in which he didn't respond, she said, "You know, the quiz?" "Oh, yeah, sure. Ready as I'll ever be." He took another strong sip, his head getting a little lighter, reminding him he hadn't eaten lunch. Thinking of the day disappearing as it had brought a ringing to his ears. He couldn't remember drawing the picture, yet the model's face now floated through his memory. He tried to ignore the increasingly loud buzzing noise, He clenched his fist around the beer, hoping the coldness would give him something to concentrate on.
"Why are you so weird at work?"
He couldn't tell if her bluntness was endearing or annoying, but it was hard to have any negative feelings towards her. Not knowing what to say, he took another sip. She kept staring. His stomach rumbled as if the beer was trying to escape.
"I don't really understand what you mean."
"It's like you're hiding."
He took a deep breath, closed his eyes, and said what he had been concealing for so long.
"It's because I'm..."
The simple words felt like a weight was lifted from him. He straightened up, staring deeply into her eyes.
"I think I'm collecting a check because everyone forgot about me."
"What's that?"
Finally uncorked, he blurted, "I used to report to a manager who was let go. He was, a little disgruntled. I asked him who I would report to, and he said he didn't care. Well, a few days went by, and nobody came, and I just kept showing up."
"You keep getting your checks, right?"
"Yeah."
"Well, then, you're being paranoid. Companies don't just pay people without keeping track of it. You still have a job."
"Or they just forgot to tell HR to cut me off."
"You're working, aren't you? So what's the big deal?"
"That's the thing. I show up every day, but there hasn't been a service call in nearly a year."
"Wait, you've been showing up like this for that long?"
Robert closed his eyes and spoke into his chest.
"Yeah."
He fought the urge to leave. As he was searching for the right thing to say, he felt her hand on his arm. He couldn't remember the last time someone touched him.
"I don't know how I let it go for this long. It just kind of happened this way."
"So what do you do all day?"
She leaned to the side and curled her leg under herself as she stared with arched eyebrows.
"Try to catch a spider that I suspect is hunting me," he thought.
His back tensed, picturing the last thick web.
"I read, draw, and hope for a way out of this situation. This is my fault for not acting immediately. It's not that I'm lazy, but, well, change isn't easy for me."
He leaned back, wanting to leave. Anne closed the distance, leaning in, and held his forearm.
"I'm so sorry you have to deal with that. It has to be awful, sitting there alone."
"You don't think I'm a jerk for showing up so long?"
"No, you need your check, just like all of us. I mean, maybe you should have said something earlier, but I know how easy it is to slip into something you don't intend to."
His heart fluttered as he thought of leaning in and kissing her.
"Thank you for saying that."
"What are you going to do?"
"Right now, hope to get through the holiday, and then after, maybe find the courage to possibly fess up."
"I could go with you if it would help."
Her fingertips massaged his arm gently, sending a tingling sensation that seemed to travel directly to his heart.
"Yeah, I think it would." "Tell you what, I'm heading out to visit my dad tomorrow afternoon. I'll be back on Monday. I know you said you want to wait, but if you're up to it, when I come back, how about we go to the office together?"
"No, I can't!"
Ignoring the screaming inside his head, he placed his fingers over Anne's hand. Her warmth gave him strength.
"Yeah, I would like that."
As if she could read his earlier thought, she leaned in and kissed him lightly on the lips. Tasting the barely there lipstick, he brought his hand to the back of her neck. She withdrew her lips and placed her forehead against his momentarily before pulling back with a bright smile. Sighing deeply, he hoped he would always remember the taste of her breath. The lights flickered, and the waitress announced it was time to begin the quiz. Robert, relieved he didn't have to say anything that could spoil the best moment of his life, sipped his beer. Politely, he smiled and nodded toward the screen above that displayed the first question. As the night went on, he drank precisely 4 beers and ate 20 mild wings, as he had done on their last visit. It was a perfect night. As he entered the office the next morning, he took a deep breath, remembering his hope for a clean office. When he flipped on the light, the largest web yet greeted him. Staring at the well-constructed strands that spanned from the ceiling to the table just behind his chair, he grunted, "Come on, take one day off." The constant hum of the fluorescent bulbs swallowed up his words. By some trick of the light, the intricately patterned web appeared in multiple shades of gray. As he examined the handiwork of the creature that was disrupting his routine, the unnaturally thick strands disgusted him. The spider's newest lair looked more like an item purchased in a novelty shop than a trap for insects. As his stomach churned, he realized how uncomfortably close the web was to his desk, making him wince. Wrapping his hands in paper towels, he pulled at the web from the top, where it was attached to the dusty ceiling tiles. The spider's handiwork sprung free, piece by piece, floating through the air. Working in very slow movements to avoid the web contacting the bare flesh of his arms, he was able to pull it loose. Imagining a tarantula with the circumference of a drink coaster crawling in and out of his mouth made him clench his teeth. After a minute of quick swipes, he was satisfied with his work. As he had done every day for the past 2 weeks, he went over every crack and crevice along the walls and baseboard of the small room, finding no obvious entry point. Looking for something to force his concentration from the spider, he grabbed his drawing from yesterday. In the brochure, as he compared it to the sketch, he realized he had somehow drawn the kitchen in mirror image. Grabbing his thermos, he poured the rest of his coffee into the cup, admiring his work. Taking deep cleansing breaths for a few seconds, he examined his dream girl. When the phone rang, piercing the silence, the mechanical bell in the relic startled Robert, causing him to spill all over the drawing. Simultaneously, he threw napkins on the paper and picked up the plastic receiver. He barked into the plastic contraption, "Gatless warranty." "Hello, my name is Kim Hedren." There was a pause, and in the background, there was a loud scratching noise. "I'm calling because my refrigerator keeps turning on and off. We purchased it some time ago. However, the tag on the back says it has an extended warranty and to call this number." Holding the phone between his shoulder and ear, he mopped the coffee off the drawing. It distorted half the pretty face he had just completed. Looking at it, he tensed, leaning forward. Holding in the obscenity he wanted to yell, he asked, "When did you purchase it, ma'am?" "Well, let's see. It was before Charlotte was born, so it had to be at least 10 years ago." "If it's that old, the only thing that would still be covered is the motor. Is it still cold inside?" He had removed as much of the spill as possible. Fortunately, the damage was contained to only the right side of the model. "Yes, I think it is." "Might not be the motor, then. Can you please give me your address and we can schedule an appointment?" 842 Terrace Drive in Orland. The address she gave him was just under an hour away. He cringed at the thought of having to leave his cocoon, making his hand shake enough that the address he was writing looked blurred. Before she spoke again, he noticed the scratching noise was growing louder, making it hard to hear. "Would you be available this afternoon?" Taking a deep breath at the thought of putting off redrawing his dream woman, he asked, "Could we possibly schedule it tomorrow?" "No, I have a previous obligation." There was a long silence. In the background, he heard a faint tapping noise. It was growing louder, overtaking the scratching. "Will you be the one coming to perform the work?" "Yes." "Will you be able to accommodate me?" Clenching the receiver tightly, he replied, "Yes." "Very well. Thank you, Robert." Before he could respond, the line went dead. Pulling the receiver free from his ear, he stared at the plastic and sarcastically said, "You're welcome. See you then." He punched the desk with the side of his fist. Although pleased to have a legitimate reason to be employed, the intrusion into his insulated world was frustrating. Realizing there was nothing else to be done with his drawing until it dried, he stuck it to the corkboard with a thumbtack, picture side down. He grabbed his tool bag from beneath the desk and shook it before unzipping it, thinking of the spider. After opening it, he performed a quick inspection, realizing he only had about half of what he needed. As he got up to open the closet where he stored his tools, he couldn't shake the feeling it was going to be a very long afternoon. Pulling open the louvered door, Robert saw the newest web spanning across the closet. His stomach churned as he stood frozen, looking at the sinewy, almost transparent net it made. Agitated terror overcame him as he thought of how the spider had been working so close to him for who knows how long. He dropped his bag and kicked the closet door. Watching the offensive web flitter in the air, he imagined thick legs scurrying over the cord-like net. Robert grabbed some paper towels and glass cleaner. He stabbed at the web. The long strands clung to the back of his hand, sticking to the fine hair. Repulsed, he frantically wiped the residue off using a flinching motion, his ears ringing loudly as he worked. Swatting at his forearms, he felt as if hundreds of tiny insects were crawling up his arms, looking for retribution against the giant destroying the trap they had so skillfully crafted. He thoroughly inspected the chair, desk, and surrounding area, seeing nothing. With only a few minutes to spare, he filled his tool bag, imagining phantom legs crawling up his socks the whole time. As he passed the corkboard and his sketch, he noticed the paper had rippled in the spot that was stained by the coffee. Besides half the model's face being distorted, it was in pretty decent shape. Feeling a little optimism amidst the panic, he grabbed the address off his desk and headed to the office door to get the service van from the garage. As he always did, he placed his head against the door, listening for anyone there. Every day, he was sure he was going to walk into a passing manager, and they would remove him from his haven and his much-needed income. Holding his breath, all he heard was a light scratching, reminding him of the phone call. Faintly, he thought he heard a female voice say, "Yes, soon." He paused for nearly a full minute, pressing his ear against the cold metal. Confident the hall was clear, he opened the door slowly. It revealed a very dark foyer, obscuring the shape of the squeaky voice at the end of the narrow passage. "Please come in." Robert squinted, looking ahead through the shadows. The hidden voice said through the darkness, "The kitchen's just this way. Please close the door behind you." He stepped backward into the office and dropped the tool bag. Staring down the narrow hallway, he thought he could see the shape of a woman. Panicked, he slammed the door shut. With labored breaths, he whispered into the empty space, "What?" The word seemed to anchor him, bringing back a tiny amount of strength and reason. He gripped the handle to the door and turned it, slowly. Inching the door open, he leaned against the far wall and stared down the same foyer, taking a half step back as if the extra couple of inches would provide some safety. The shadow advanced toward him in fragmented movements. "Are you coming?" The words echoed in a deep bass like they were penetrating him through his skin. Quickly, he slammed the door closed again, shouting, "Please, if this is a dream, let me wake up right now!" He closed his eyes and leaned against the wall, his head spinning and his stomach rumbling. Deep down, he knew the wish was useless. He was not asleep, but he clung to the thought. Turning, he leaned against the wall again and slid down, sitting on the dirty linoleum. Straining to hear, there was only the same dull hum. After a few minutes, he slowly made his way to the desk. Finally, he grabbed the phone and brought it to his ear. The line rang without him dialing a number. Hitting the transfer switch did nothing. The phone kept ringing. In a flash of panic, he slammed the receiver down. As he sat in the chair staring at the door, he wished he had locked it. After 20 minutes of his mind stretching his nerves, he found the strength to go back to the door, knowing that if he didn't get control soon, he might never do so. He jerked the door open. As he peered into the dim light, he saw that nothing had changed. Taking small, tentative steps, he walked down the narrow hallway, ready to end whatever distorted delusion his mind was conjuring. Standing in front of him was a woman wearing a formal dress. As he ascended two small steps, he noticed she had a slight limp. Robert looked back at his office. The door was slowly swinging closed. With a yelp, he reached for the handle, missing it by inches. It closed completely, locking shut. Instinctively, he reached for his belt clip, then realizing the keys were back on his desk. With no other option, he slowly turned, directed his attention forward, and began walking. Each step echoed through the darkness. Guided by the dim light, he shuffled along, feeling like a thick band was being tightened around his chest. Once through the hallway, he saw the outline of the woman turn, taking a small step down. Following, he came to the kitchen. It was laid out exactly as the sketch he had drawn earlier. Robert took in the oddly familiar surroundings, his eyes tracing every inch, hoping the hallucination would end soon. He slipped the strap of his tool bag off his shoulder as if in a trance. Muscle memory was guiding him now. The fridge was on the right side of the L-shaped design of the room, where Kim now stood. She turned, and Robert took her in. Her clothing and figure were a near duplicate of the model from the photograph he had drawn. The dress was a different color, but the design was identical, with the squared neckline and matching hem. Tracing every inch, he discovered the material was tight enough to leave very little to the imagination. From the dress up, the only similarity was her hair color. She wore her auburn locks down with severe bangs and a wave that obscured a good portion of her face. From what he could see, she was very alluring. So much so that, despite the fear, he longed to be near her. Kim turned her head, her hair waving back and forth. Placing one hand on her hip, she pointed at the fridge. "Since I called you earlier, it's been staying off for longer periods." She flipped the side-by-side door open. Placing her hand inside, she said, "Now it's barely cold." Taking a step towards her, he looked at her left hand. She quickly balled it into a fist as if she was concealing something. "What's happening?" With a sarcastic tone, she replied, "That's what you're here to find out, Robert." "How do you know my name?" He searched for a way out of the claustrophobic space, but found nothing except ordinary objects that were haunting his thoughts. "Whatever do you mean?" She let out a brief chuckle. "How could I not?" Robert looked at the back door of the kitchen. It had two deadbolts, neither of which had a key. He thought of dashing to the door, but knew that he would be pinned in with nowhere to go if it was locked. Directly to the right, he saw another door. Assuming it was to the basement, the urge to run to it was overwhelming. "Miss, I don't know what's happening, but I have to go. I have other appointments scheduled for today." His voice was shaky, not sounding like himself, adding to the growing panic. Somewhere nearby, the familiar scratching noise was growing louder. "I can't let you leave just yet." The teeth glistened in the dull light. "Not after waiting this long." He thought of running back down the hallway. The idea of getting caught in the darkness with her behind him and no exit made him freeze. "Please, ma'am. Please, we can reschedule for tomorrow, okay?" Each word made his heart rate increase. I don't even have the equipment I need to fix your refrigerator." "How could you know that without even inspecting it?" She stepped to the side, making room for him to come closer. "After coming all this way, you might as well take a look, don't you think?" Ignoring instinct, his legs moved as if he were in a trance. He took a step toward her, trying to buy time until he could figure out a way to escape. Grabbing the door of the olive-colored appliance, her perfume was intoxicating. He reached inside the fridge and put his hand against the back wall, feeling for the vibration of the motor. Trying to buy more time until he could think up a plan, he closed the door and said, "Let me look at what's going on." She took a small step back as he shuffled the appliance forward. Their bodies came into slight contact with one another. Feeling her hip against his forearm brought a wave of disgusted passion. He quickly turned sideways into the narrow opening behind the appliance, urgently needing to be free from her touch. Knowing she was watching his every move, he played out the part, trying to look as if he was focused on repairing the machine. Pinned between the enormous fridge and the dirty wall, he could barely lift his arms to unplug the cord and replace it with the voltage tester. The meter did not move. Robert, in a voice much too loud, said, "Well, I think I might have discovered the problem." She stepped behind him, pinning him tightly in the enclosed space. Over his shoulder, he made up the first excuse that came to mind. Looks like you have a bad outlet or a loose wire.
Relief washed over him, believing he had found an excuse to get her to leave the room and whatever madness he had slipped into.
The good news is that it's an easy fix, and cheaper than a new fridge.
Out of the corner of his eye, he could see the edges of her hair inches from his face. He wanted to look away from her piercing stare, but couldn't.
Can you fix it?
She shifted her head slightly, the shadow covering her profile almost disappearing.
Is there nothing you can do? If it's a matter of money, I can pay you.
The thought rushed to him, making it seem like he could breathe normally for the first time.
I'm not supposed to, but if it is a loose wire, I can fix it. Do you know where your electric box is?
He did his best to say calmly,
You have to turn the power off first.
Taking a step back, she said,
The power is in the basement, but I'm not sure where.
It should be easy enough to find. If you can run down there and flip the switch, I can get this fixed up.
I'm not exactly dressed for that.
She looked down at her dated dress. Could you possibly do it for me? He hid the disappointment that she didn't bite. Hoping there was a window downstairs, he quickly said,
Of course. I may have to turn off the main circuit so the power will go off everywhere. You might want to warn anyone else who's home.
He held her gaze, anxiously waiting to see if she'd reveal if anyone else was in the house.
It's just me and my daughter, Charlotte. She's most likely taking a nap. The girl does little else.
She gave a knowing smile as she pointed to a door at the back of the room. Beside the door was a large cork board that was a collage of flyers and coupons from various stores in the mall.
The basement's right through there. Thank you again for being so kind.
Grabbing his flashlight, he attempted to smile. His lips felt as if they were made of concrete, weighing them down into a permanent frown. Trying to hide the feeling of uneasiness, he turned his head away. As he walked over to the door, he remembered something she had said earlier about the fridge being as old as her daughter. He found himself relieved to know that even if he encountered another member of her family, at least a child would be easy to get away from. Quickly, he walked toward the basement. The door didn't want to open. Both deadbolts were still latched. It took some effort to spring the locks. They groaned against the pressure of his shaking fingers. Somewhere in the distance, he heard the scraping noise again. So close to the back door, he thought again of running. He gauged the distance from Kim, realizing that she would be on him in seconds if the deadbolts didn't cooperate. He opened the door to the basement. If it had a window, it was his best chance. If it didn't, it would at least buy him a few minutes to think. Making his way down the stairs, he groped for a light switch, his head spinning. Finally finding it, he flipped on the light. The basement was damp, very dark, and mostly unfinished except for two half-painted walls. In the dead center of the room was a series of boxes creating a makeshift hallway. Navigating through with the beam of his flashlight, he saw the electric box in the far corner. As he walked toward it, he fluttered his hand frantically before him, removing thick cobwebs. Moving around a wall of boxes, he came across the spider. The hideous shadow slowly revealed itself. Scampering on hairy legs, it was nearly the size of a German shepherd. Robert froze. His brain was trying to make some sort of sense of what he clearly saw, thinking it had to be a leftover Halloween decoration. Watching its deliberate stalking movement, he bit his tongue hard enough to draw blood. Suddenly, the eight-legged mass scurried sideways and pounced on him. He was in no condition to even try to defend himself, as the weight of its leathery body clung to him, wrapping its many hairy legs around him. Falling backward, the back of his skull contacted the concrete floor. As his vision faded out, he could see a phantom vision of the model from the brochure, smiling. The room was nearly black, with only a small stream of light filtering through, making it impossible to discern anything other than shapes. The clearest was that of an enormous spider. It clung to the same web as Robert. The creature was lightly bouncing up and down, using its legs to absorb the shock of the moving web. Its thick torso remained perfectly still, the head pointing directly at him.
Robert tried to shield his face at the sight of the creature, quickly realizing he couldn't move. His lungs burned as he took sharp breaths, the panic making him warm all over. Straining, he wiggled, but his arms were tightly pinned inches from his body, feeling like they were swaddled by an unseen, thin cloth. His frantic efforts to move only caused the web to sway faster, the vibration now making the spider appear to dance in the darkness. It scurried towards him. As each hairy leg lifted from the web, Robert cringed, hearing a sickening, sticky slapping noise. Shaking every muscle, desperate for freedom, the spider was now inches from his face. He strained against the impenetrable web until he thought his heart was going to explode. Hoping to get one part, any part of his body free, the only movement he could muster was the slight nodding of his head. Just as he felt bristled hair against his cheek, he screamed. Seconds later, blackness seemed to pull his eyelids down as consciousness slipped away once again. Coming out of a fitful sleep, he felt so warm he imagined the sun beating down upon him. But when he opened his eyes, there were only dark shadows, reminding him of where he was. From somewhere above, he heard the sticky noise once again. Glancing up, the spider's shadow came slowly into view, dangling on a single strand, stopping directly in front of his face. He closed his eyes so tight he felt a stabbing pain in his eyelid. He prayed silently as the monster caressed his face, with legs that felt like carpeting rubbing against the stubble of his beard. Skillfully, he felt the spider disentangle itself, each leg slowly adhering to the tight web surrounding his body. Robert tried to wish the creature away. If it was going to eat him, he hoped it would do it right now. Anything would be better than being trapped like this. The spider began nuzzling its face against his, making a gurgling noise, which was quickly followed by chunky discharge being spit onto his face. He closed his mouth and tried to eject the substance from his nostrils with a strong breath. As he quickly inhaled the needed air, he nearly choked. Using the tip of his tongue to flick the thick liquid from his lips, his tongue brushed against something that felt like a straw. He cried out in disgust. The noise caused the leathery body to pounce, shaking the whole web. Each upward thrust of the dangling web caused Robert to come into contact with the monster's thick torso. It felt like a sack of bundled rags bouncing against his own motionless upper body. For what seemed like hours, the spider lay across Robert, its body heat making him sweat. He licked the sweat from his upper lip. The salty liquid made him gag, but he swallowed it, needing relief from his thirst. Robert, tired from fighting, helpless and vulnerable, slept with the creature lying against him. Suddenly, there was a dim light in the room. Through puffy, sleep-filled eyes, he saw Kim standing a few feet before him. She smiled as they made eye contact. He knew what she was going to look like even before she turned her head. The right side of her lips and chin drooped almost to her neck, the entire side of her face nearly erased, matching the drawing hanging back at his office. The spider came crawling from behind the mountain of boxes. Slowly, it caressed Kim's nylon legs, nuzzling itself against her. She spoke softly as she stroked the hairy body. The spider rose, welcoming her massaging hand. Her voice came to him in a soothing, near whisper. "I know, Charlotte. It's okay. Your friend will eventually eat when he gets hungry enough." "Please, just kill me and get this over with." "Oh, we aren't going to kill you, Robert. You're here as a companion for my daughter. She's very lonely, just like you were when you brought us to life." The hairy monster seemed to sense his stare as it turned, and for the first time, Robert got a good look in the added light of the multi-eyed, childlike face. With a bright smile, it sauntered to him. Trying to recoil, he violently fought the sticky web, gaining nothing as the spider quickly scurried up his tangled web. Back at the department store, Anne finally got to a manager on her lunch break. She was growing more frantic with every passing minute. Robert hadn't opened the basement office when she returned yesterday morning. When she came down at noon, she pounded and even tried calling the warranty number. Worried that she was going to expose him, as she promised she wouldn't, she slept on it. When she returned today and he still wasn't there, she could wait no longer. When she found Mr. Gatlett's son and explained her concerns, he looked up Robert's file, and she could tell by his expression that he had no idea who he was. After nearly begging, they made their way downstairs. With Mr. Gatlett at her shoulder, she flipped the light switch to the warranty department. As the fluorescent lights slowly flickered to life, they were both shocked by the massive spider web that covered the entire length of the back wall of the office. Nestled in the exact center of the web was Robert's pencil drawing of a beautiful woman standing in a dated kitchen, holding a very hairy child's hand. The child held a black and white doll. Beneath tufts of artificial hair, the worn cloth of its face matched Robert's. His eyes were wide and his lips stretched, giving him a fixed look of terror. That was Tangled Web by Jason Fisher. Jason Fisher is a horror and crime author specializing in anthologies. When not writing, you can find Jason biking the trails around his home, playing with his nephews, adding to his VHS collection, or on the deck, feeding the deer and enjoying nature. Well, friends, if you needed any more reasons to stay away from malls, now you have them. You know, I myself did some time working at a Spencer's Gifts in a mall growing up. Even though I now spend all of my time reading horror, there is nothing that matches the existential dread of walking into that giant building every day and spending the next 8 hours listening to piped-in pop music and selling kitschy merchandise to screaming teenagers. Ugh. Well, while I'd pretty much rather do anything than that, something I'd particularly like to do is to remind you to head to Velux Books to check out the rest of Jason Fisher's The Haunting of Town Point Mall. And, while you're there, why not also grab the audiobook of Micah Edwards' A Talent for Destruction, narrated by this guy, right here. Thank you all for joining me, and I hope to see you again next week. Until then, stay spooky. You've been listening to the Horror Hill Podcast, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. Tonight's episode was hosted, narrated, scored, and finalized by yours truly, Eric Peabody. Additional music by Nikki McSorley. Got a terrifying tale of your own that you'd like performed? Email it to us at submissions@simplyscarypodcast.com to have your work considered for future production. Note that any writing utilizing artificial intelligence is ineligible. If you enjoyed tonight's episode, why not help us spread our dark presence online? You can follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights on social media, and upvote, subscribe, and hit the bell notification icon if you're listening to this on YouTube. It helps us out a lot and also keeps you up to date on new episodes. If you'd like access to uninterrupted horror, free of ads and these annoying bookend segments, might I recommend signing up to be a patron? You'll get access to hundreds of episodes of this show, as well as everything from the other programs in the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights cabal. That means all of Scary Stories Told in the Dark, Drew Blood's Dark Tales, and more. It's a veritable smorgasbord of horrific delights. Head to chillingtalesfordarknights.com to get started. If you're looking for someone to narrate or handle audio production for your own personal project, I just so happen to know a guy. Email me at ericpeabodyvoice@gmail.com. That's ericpeabodyvoice. And we can talk details. If darkness is what you're after, listener, your search is over. Yet, let it be known, you haven't found the darkness.
the darkness has found you.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here. And if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.